One of the most interesting things to me has been this idea of how do we think about evidence impacting policy? How do we think about evidence affecting change? We don't want to affect change for change's sake. We want it to be evidence-based.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, a series of interviews with practitioners around the world. My name is Tim Phillips. Today I'm talking to Chris Woodruff, who's Professor of Development Economics at the University of Oxford. He spent many years studying enterprises in developing countries. Along the way, he's found out that in this environment, trials and field experiments can be messy and hard to control, but that these challenges can lead to important insights. Chris Woodruff, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Happy to be here.
For the last 6 years, you've been working on a project in Bangladesh that's training women in the garment industry to be supervisors. What was the inspiration for this?
The initial inspiration, the initial idea for the project came from a simple fact that roughly 80% of the workers on a sewing floor in a typical factory in the garment sector in Bangladesh are women. About 95% of the supervisors and managers are men. And we looked at that and thought, it seems like that's probably not an efficient outcome, although we understand how it's come about from the trajectory of the industry. And maybe we ought to understand at least whether that is an efficient outcome or if promoting more women would be not only good from potentially an equity and an opportunity perspective, but also good from an efficiency perspective.
When you talk about we, who's behind this project?
I have many collaborators in the work, academics in the UK, students and other collaborators in Bangladesh. The initial project we did was done collaboratively with the German bilateral aid agency, GIZ. They had developed a program to train sewing machine operators to be supervisors. They had trained 6 consulting companies in Bangladesh to administer that program. They did a pilot. They stepped back and they said, now it'll all take care of itself. This will just take off. Instead, nothing happened after they stepped back. In an initial conversation with them, they said, when we talked to factories, they all told us that there were big efficiency improvements from the women, and we're surprised that they didn't follow on. Well, they had done a follow-up set of conversations with the factories, but they hadn't done a proper evaluation of how effective was the training in preparing women to be supervisors, and how effective were those women when they stepped onto the production lines. So we proposed to them doing a full-on randomized control trial with a fairly large number of factories. The first group we worked with was 60 factories, trialing the training program in an experimental way where we had a proper control group and a treatment group. And they were quite happy to support us and to go along with that. So we had started with their program and a group of factories that we collected who were suppliers from mostly UK-based brands and implemented the control trial with them.
A randomized controlled trial with 60 factories seems pretty ambitious.
It's insane. It's completely insane. If we had known how challenging and difficult it was going to be when we started, we would have come up with a different design. I mean, one of the things we learned is factories, of course, at least some of them are continuously experimenting with different changes in production and different changes in techniques. In economics, we say we're now pretty sure that there's not a unitary household. Talk about the unitary household model. And is there a unitary factory? No. We often had a key contact at the factory who was fully on board with our program, with our design, with exactly what we're going to do. But implementation depended on 6 other people in the factory. And that implementation often fell off the rails as we went along because other people in the factory weren't quite as on board with what we wanted to do as our key contact was. And these factories face enormous production pressures and they're continuously fighting fires. They're continuously trying to solve the crisis that's happened on a given day from any number of sources.
How much useful information can you realistically get out of a trial like this?
We learned quite a lot. We had to be quite agile as we went through, in the sense that I think when we designed the project, we had in mind collecting certain types of data. We had in mind a certain pathway by which the intervention would have an effect. And we had in mind kind of certain challenges that we thought the women who were selected for training would face. We discovered, and of course that's what research is about, discovery. We discovered lots of other constraints in the course of undertaking the project. Perhaps the biggest change that has to happen in these factories is a cultural change rather than changing sort of formal rules or formal procedures. The industry, I think, had always promoted men to supervisory positions. If I go back 20 years, this is the industry that really drew women into the labor force in Bangladesh. When we started this project, a lot of managers in factories and others told us, look, when women get married and have children, they drop out of the labor force. They're interested in a career path that includes supervisory work. I suspect that might have been true 20 years ago. It's demonstrably not true now. 80% of the women sewing operators in the factory are married, 45% have children, and they continue to work in the factories. But they also, in order to step into this role, need support from their households and their families to take on a role of supervisor in the factory, because they are kind of sticking their neck out in a way and doing something which goes against the cultural grain. And not all women have that support. So I think one thing we learned is that's very important. Another thing that we learned is that men enter the factory with the idea that they'll become supervisors. And when they begin to see women promoted as supervisors, they don't like it. They think that's affecting their career prospects. Now, the Bangladeshi economy has grown at 7% a year for the last 20 years, largely driven by the garment sector. That 7% growth has created tremendous opportunities for workers in Bangladesh, and particularly for men. And so increasingly, men are choosing different careers anyway, but those that enter the factory still enter the factory with the idea that they'll become supervisors. So we see also resistance from males in the factory to the promotion of women into supervisory roles. That's one of the challenges that women face in the job. And those are things I think that we hadn't anticipated. Those two, family support and resistance from male workers, are things we hadn't anticipated when we started the project.
These are interesting things to learn, but this is not just academic research. You want to change things for the better. So how do you respond?
This has, I think, been, for me, reflecting on this, one of the most interesting things about the project. And I think this speaks to research more generally on the private sector in developing countries. When we think about what are the levers for changing anything in the factory, of course, as researchers, we think information plays a role. We need to show that this is an effective policy for factories to follow. Who's the audience for that business case? Oftentimes, that role is not the government. Usually when we think about research that we're doing, the policymaker that's central to what we do is a government policymaker. In the private sector, that's often not the case. In this case, I think we think, what are the levers that would help implement change if that change is worth implementing? In this case, the foreign brands, the buyers, are one lever, and ultimately that's the consumers who demand from their brands certain ethical practices and corporate social responsibility actions that affect how brands interact with their suppliers. It's organizations like the International Labor Organization and the IFC and others who work with factories in the sector. It's NGOs, it's industry association, and it's the factories themselves.
How do you reach the managers and the business people, though, if these are the people that can make the changes that you want to make?
One is we work through organizations like the buyers and like the ILO IFC, which jointly run a program called Better Work. So we've done some work through Better Work in a project that's tried to scale up some of the training programs that we've done with factories. Also worked through brands to work with suppliers. That's how we get a sample of factories with whom we work, and then we approach the factories and propose collaborating on a project, and the factories decide whether they want to participate or not. There's a different question, which is, how do we influence the factories? And if you had asked me 10 years ago, I would have said the model for research is we do a research paper, it demonstrates that something is effective. People read that research paper, and they change their actions on the basis of that. I can think of examples where research has directly led to changing a law or other kind of action like that. In this case, a couple of the factories decided this is really the right way to go. We have one factory we've worked with that now has a goal of having 50% female supervisors within the next 3 years. There are a few factories that have really decided this is the way to go. A couple of those in particular are quite leading factories in the industry, and I think people are beginning to see, if this is something that they're doing and that they think is worth doing, it's something we should think about as well, and that influences come from the role models of the factories themselves who have really adopted the program that we've implemented.
What's the incentive for the enterprises that are the role models? Is it just all about money, or do they have a desire to do the right thing?
That's a good question. I think it's a mixture of both. I think they do see that there are at least certain brands that are quite interested in this and that therefore it helps them in their relationships with the brands. I think they also see that as the economy grows and as the opportunities for men in the economy in particular increase, that this is something that they're going to need to do in the future. Again, if I go back 20 years, I suspect that a male with secondary schooling would have thought, garment sector is a pretty good place for me to go. I'm not sure that's the case anymore. The construction sector, the service sector, there are lots of other sectors in Bangladesh that have grown tremendously in the last 20 years, and that men may think these are better places for them to work. Most of those sectors are still shut off to women with secondary schooling or less. The garment sector is still the one place that moderately educated women can have a career that's socially acceptable. So for that reason, the factories, I think, have begun to say, we're not attracting the quality of the men that we used to attract. We need to begin to think about how we develop the skills of the women that we continue to attract as employees.
As a researcher, you're constantly evaluating a moving target in these situations because these businesses are constantly changing things. How do you make sense of the data that you get when you want to isolate the effect of one intervention?
As researchers, we're interested in measuring the actual effectiveness of the trainees as supervisors. We've done that in two ways. One is we've collected quite detailed production data from the factories, and these are mainly suppliers to large brands, and they're fairly sophisticated factories, so they retain in digital form production data, quality data, absenteeism data, HR data, and so forth on a daily basis from all the production lines in the factory. And so we use those detailed production data to try to understand what's happening at the nitty-gritty level of efficiency on production lines, absenteeism, and other kinds of outcomes. Turns out there's a lot of variance in efficiency. This comes from various kinds of shocks, electricity outages, supply shocks, various kinds of things. It's difficult to pin down a precise productivity effect. We can show what we think is an initial decrease in productivity when women start working on the line and a recovery within a period of about 3 or 4 months. And we have some hypotheses about why that dip happens. We also use survey data from supervisors and trainees themselves, from their co-supervisors, and from operators who work under those supervisors. Those data tend to demonstrate a similar pattern, that initially the operators who work under the women who are trained and become supervisors think the women perform worse than a typical supervisor in the factory, but within about 3 or 4 months they catch up to a level that's comparable to both typical supervisors and newly trained male supervisors as well. So we use both survey data that we collect from the factories and the detailed administrative records of the factories. I think the survey data, although they have the disadvantage of being self-reported opinions of workers, they have the advantage of being much more precisely about this particular trainee and this particular employee, and therefore they're a little sharper, a little more precise in that sense. They tend to show kind of similar patterns.
Do you and your colleagues have to think flexibly like the managers and entrepreneurs that you meet in this type of business environment?
I don't know if I can claim to be thinking as clearly as the entrepreneurs think. It's certainly a different environment. Most of the last 20 years I've spent working on projects related to micro-enterprises, much smaller scale enterprises. It's not entirely unusual if we fail to survey a micro-entrepreneur 1 month, that person will call my in-country collaborator and say, hey, nobody came to talk to me last month. Why not? That never happens with the large factories. We struggle to keep appointments with them because they do face these constraints. I think the other thing is when we talk to micro-entrepreneurs, they tend to be fairly forthcoming and there's nobody that they are really worried about hearing their answers. When we talk to workers in the factories, of course, they're working in the factories, and first of all, we have to reassure them, and we are very careful that their responses are between us and that the factory management won't hear them and won't know about them, because I think anytime you're in a hierarchy, and it's not true just in developing countries, it's true in any hierarchy anywhere. If you ask a lower level employee something, they might worry about whether their boss hears that response and what the boss would think of that response if they give an honest and open response. And so I think that makes it quite a bit more challenging.
Given all of these constraints, how confident can you be about the quality of the conclusions you draw from what you've observed?
One of the things I think that we would look at is how the factory management themselves are reacting to what they see going on. And are their reactions consistent with what we're seeing in the data? So, for example, that we see evidence of some resistance from male workers to being managed by female workers. Well, it turns out that the first factory that really began to scale up this idea of promoting more women saw the same thing. And the first thing they did was take, in that factory, we had trained 5 women. They have lines that are production lines that are long enough. They have 3 supervisors on the line. The first thing they did was take the 3 women who had accepted promotion of the 5 that we trained and put them all on one production line and then made the production line all female workers. So that sort of says to me, they also understood that there were issues of women managing men, and especially women who were new supervisors managing men. So I think those are the kinds of things that we look at where in actions of the factories, we see them doing things that are consistent with what our data say they should be doing. You know, we try to do the best we can at measuring things, but I wouldn't say, you know, we definitely have the truth in these data. We think that the survey responses are pointing to something. There are people being fully forthcoming. It's a little hard to say. We've started doing quite a lot of survey work over the telephones, and we think that workers are more forthcoming when we interview them on the phone and they're outside the factory than they are when they're inside the factory. Are they fully forthcoming when they're outside the factory? I really don't know. I mean, it's really difficult to say. They still may worry that somehow what they say gets back to factory management. And I think we feel like we can pick up directions of change. We may not always be precisely measuring magnitudes of change with the survey data. Obviously, with the administrative data, we've got the data as the factory sees it, and that's precise as it can be in a way.
Do you feel in a bigger picture that you've learned things about how to do research better in the private sector?
I've definitely learned a lot. I think there are probably still things that I haven't learned yet and haven't figured out yet. But I've definitely learned a lot. And as I say, I think one of the most interesting things to me has been this idea of how do we think about evidence impacting policy? How do we think about evidence affecting change? We don't want to affect change for change's sake. We want it to be evidence-based. We want to be able to present some evidence. But perhaps because what we've just been talking about, the fact that some of these measurement issues are quite difficult, maybe that's why, in a sense, that when we present the actual data, factories will have their own sense of what happened as a result of the experiment. And perhaps the most important thing we've done is to get them to undertake an experiment within the factory that they themselves learn from. And although we can show them results and we can show them what happened with, you know, with the set of workers that were trained in their factory, they have some sense of knowing kind of what's happened with the workers in their factory as well. And I think the other thing is working within these hierarchies like this is challenging because you have good support from an individual, but the implementation requires the actions of lots of other individuals. Sometimes they're openly hostile to the idea. Oftentimes, the communication isn't very good, and they're not on board because they don't know what the project is about. No one's really explained it to them. So they do something different because on a given day and a given set of circumstances, this is the better thing to do, even though it's not the protocol of what the experiment is.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Tim. It was a great talking to you.
This has been a Vox Dev Talk. You can find others in the series at voxdev.org, and now all our Vox Dev Talks are available on the major podcast platforms.